Hi everybody, it's Doc from the John Freaking Mirror Pod, and I want to let you know about our new website on WordPress. Take a few minutes and check it out. You'll be able to find pictures of the pod's guests, links to the podcast and social media accounts, ways to support the pod, how to get in touch, and our entire back catalog is there, including episode summaries. Missed these sections of the JMT episodes? You can find them there. Missed a Triple Crowner episode? Yep, that's there too. World travelers, adventure athletes, polar explorers, Barkley Marathon competitors, authors, filmmakers, documentarians, and more are waiting for you. Take a look at the new website, and just a reminder, adventure lives here. We all eat, and it would be a sad waste of opportunity to eat badly. Anna Thomas.
We like steaks, and we like to drink red wine and things like that. And I guess if you've got the energy to be able to carry it up there, it does put a bit of extra weight. It just kind of adds to the whole experience of, you know, I'm out here in this, you know, big area of mountains, especially in the Lake District and whatnot, and I'm eating a steak. And that does it for me. It does. I think it's kind of combining the two hobbies of bushcraft and mountain camping, and just kind of, you know, a bit of a crossover, really. So yeah, we do eat well, and we do carry a lot of booze as well sometimes. So yeah, that's just how we do it. A lot of other UK campers do the same sort of thing.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freaking Mirror Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, on to this week's content. This week, once again, we are reaching across the pond to talk to one of our friends in the UK. Joining us today is Sean, the creator and star of the Sean Explorers Instagram and YouTube accounts. If you have not followed or subscribed to those accounts, do yourself a favor and take a look. Sean's got lots of entertaining and inspirational content, and it all takes place in the outdoors. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Sean.
Hi, Doc. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. What time is it over there?
It is 10 to 4 in the afternoon.
Okay. So I did a better job of coordinating this interview than I did with our friend PJ over in the UK. I had set up an interview with PJ, not realizing where he was. And he gets on, and I find out that he had to go to sleep for a while, set an alarm, woke up. It was actually 2 a.m. London time when he was talking to me. So he was a great sport about that. And I made sure to realize where my guests are coming from, make sure that I didn't put you in that same spot. So it's early in the morning over here and later in the afternoon over there. So very good. All right. Hey, over in the UK, I understand that trail names are not a big phenomenon.
Not so much. There are some trails that a lot of people take on, usually quite big challenges. You know, you have the likes of the Wainwright's Coast to Coast, you have the Coastal Trails, Southeast Coastal Trail, the Welsh Coastal Path, etc., and things like that. And generally, when people do things like that, it's usually like a charity trial, or you know, somebody who's really into the hike, and they'll just take it upon themselves to do it themselves. So trail names aren't really massive now.
Trail names as in names given to hikers.
Ah, well, that proves it, because I didn't get what you meant. that absolutely proves it, yeah. No, it's not. Trail names aren't really something used by people in the UK. Unless you're a YouTuber or Instagrammer, obviously I've got my tag, which is Sean Explores. Uh-huh. That's about as far as it goes.
So you obviously don't have a trail name then, other than just your just Sean Explores.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Got it. Do you aspire?
Sorry, could you explain trail names a little
further? Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So a trail name is the name that you earn while you're on the trail. Something happens, you've got a personality trait, and your trail mates, your hikers, your companion hikers are the ones to give you the trail name. You can't pick your own trail name. It has to be given to you by a fellow hiker, and it has to be related to, some part of your personality or something that happened on the trail. For example, I have a good friend that I've done a lot of hiking with. His trail name is Chopper. And his trail name is Chopper because he got altitude sickness on a multi-day hike. And the only way to get him down out of the altitude to help him was to have him evacuated out by a helicopter. So his trail name is Chopper, but there's all kinds of different characters out on the trail. And I've had folks on the trail, Triple Crowner, who's done the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail. He was given the trail name Ginger Balls.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Now I've got a couple episodes coming up where I talk to Scrapbook and Little Skittles, and these all are, they derive out of something that happened on the trail. There's something, some peculiar quirk that those hikers had. So it's kind of like it's kind of like just an alternate persona, your hiking persona.
I've not earned mine yet. Not earned mine yet.
All right. Okay. Have you listened to the podcast before?
I have, yeah. But obviously, since being invited on, I've took the time to listen to a couple, and but some far more impressive individuals than myself, I must admit. People have done a lot more than I have. I really like the format, and it's something I'll definitely be listening to a lot more in the car when I'm traveling to work and whatnot. I found when I got into this, I couldn't find anything like this, like a podcast for the outdoors, especially for wild camping and hiking and listening to other people's stories. So in short, yes, but not enough. And I will listen to it more.
I wasn't trying to put pressure on you. I just wanted to know if you were familiar with one of our regular features. It's called the Pro Tip Inside of the Week.
Yes, I have. I've familiarized myself with that. Yeah, I've got something better.
Okay. So, then as we get closer to the end of the episode, I'm going to turn to you and I'm going to say, hey, Sean, what is your pro tip insight of the week? What little secret tip insight can you share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience that much better?
Yeah, that's cool. That's fine.
Okay. So be thinking about that as we get to the end there.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Could I just have 1 second? My dog's scratching against the back door. I'll just let
Absolutely.
Him in. I think the missus has gone upstairs, so she's out the way, so she can't hear. 1 minute. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry. Very sorry about that.
No problem. All right.
I'm back.
He's back. You prefer Sean?
Sean, yeah. Sean, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Nothing really short for Sean. No nicknames or nothing. Yeah. Okay. I won't talk.
Another feature we've been doing this season is the must bring gear review. Here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike, what is the one specific piece of gear that you would insist on being packed? And if you got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better.
Oh, that's a tricky one. Okay. Most important bit of kit for me. Are we talking year round as well? It can be any time.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to go with something a bit strange. I mean, it's not going to really help for shelter or anything like that. But the one thing I really appreciate, especially in the evenings, is my down jacket. My hooded down jacket, it just, you could be up at the top of a mountain. You could have your tent and everything, but you're going to be tent bound unless you have this down jacket. I mean, it could be down at freezing 0 degrees C. You put that on and it just gives you that extra couple of hours to be outside of your tent, take things in, do a bit of photography. So for me, my must-have bit of kit that I have with me is my Berghaus down. What is it? It's a Berghaus Extreme micro down jacket. That's my prized possession when I'm up in the hills. Yeah.
Nice. And what kind of temperatures do you get yourself into with that jacket?
I've been down to zero. Obviously, we're now coming into winter in the UK and we've got snow, so I'm due to head out on Wednesday night. I've got some new sleep kit, a new sleep system to try out for snow. So I'm hoping for, you know, just sort of early minus C figure, so -3, -4. Or obviously looking to camp on snow, and there's a wind chill on top of that. So we're not talking Arctic conditions, but yeah, we're getting colder.
Yeah. And just to clarify for our listeners and our viewers, is that centigrade or Fahrenheit?
It's centigrade. So I believe 0F is -18°C. That's how a Gavin the scale works. If you go down to 0F, it's actually -18°C.
So when you're talking about when you're talking about 0 degrees, you're talking about 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. Yeah. Got I don't work in degrees Fahrenheit, unfortunately, over here. So you know more than me.
Just barely.
Yeah. Yeah. So not too cold. As you know, I'm fairly new to this sort of hobby. And, you know, it's sort of took off in a big way over the past sort of 9 months. So this has been my first winter, but I've now managed to be able to get hold of the kit, especially the sleep system is so important. You know, every trip I go out on, it's more than likely going to be a camp at the top of a mountain. So we've got some pretty serious conditions over here. Nothing like in some of the really big mountains you have over there in America, but it's time to get pretty serious with the kit and try it out and put it through its paces. And yeah, plenty to come.
Yeah, I'm intrigued now. Tell me about your new sleep system.
Yeah, so basically, I've gone through a couple of different sleep mats this year. I've had, I don't know, do you guys have Robins as a brand over there?
That does not sound familiar.
No. So I started off with, I tried to go for the thickest mat possible, 90 mil, had an R value of, I'm not even sure what it was, but it's supposed to protect down to 0 degrees. And it was brilliant first couple of sleeps, but I kept falling off it because it was so thick. So I went from that to it was just like a cheap pocket sprung kind of mat, you know, with all the different cells, different air cells. Mm-hmm. And that was brilliant, but it didn't have any R value to it at all. Got really good sleeps in the summer, but obviously now it's starting to get cold out. Go back to the Robins for some protection, still didn't keep me warm. So I've actually gone for the I've gone with Thermarest. Mm-hmm. I take it, do you guys have Thermarest over there?
We do, yep.
Yeah, so I've gone for the Thermarest NeoAir X-Therm Max sleeping pad. Got an R value of 8.9, so I'll be comfortable in some pretty harsh conditions. And then for my sleeping bag, I've actually stuck with Thermarest, and I've gone for the Thermarest Questar 0F-18C. So that claims to be able to keep you warm down to, well, 0F, mm-hmm. which I'll never, well, we'll see how the next couple of years go, but it should certainly keep me toasty in UK conditions. Yeah. So that's a new one. That's getting used for the first time on Wednesday.
Nice. So let's back up. When you said you're new to the sport, you're new to the hobby. You've been doing this for about 9 months or so. Let's go back and talk about your background, growing up, your day job. How do you fund your adventures? You know, how did it all start here?
Right. Okay. So, day job. I'm an engineer by trade, so mechanical, electrical engineer, multi-skilled on big generator sets. I've past few years, I've kind of worked my way up through into sort of man management, team leading sort of things. But now I've took a swoop across into project management, project engineering. So that's how I afford my kit, because of the day job, which is cool. That's good. And in terms of the actual hobby itself, for hiking, I used to go out a bit. Not, I wouldn't say we were passionate about it. In fact, we definitely weren't, but we'd go on the occasional hike with the family, just up some local hills now and again. We've got a local hill, I say local, one in Wales called Moel Famel. I think it's about 500 metres. It's nothing big, but it's a little bit of a challenge if you're not into it. So I always used to like that kind of getting out and about, putting your warm gear on and the views to see. Unfortunately, for most of my 20s and into early 30s, it's something that I always wanted to do, but it never happened. And I was, you know, I was always watching different videos on YouTube, different YouTubers who got out and about, you know, into the wild, filming their expeditions, the kit that they've got. And I watched them for years and years and never actually got out to go and do it for myself. However, this year, beginning of this year, obviously, we've hit the COVID, the lockdown. The UK was locked down for quite a long period at the beginning of the year with absolutely nothing to do. So a lot of spare money, as it were, no nights out, no meals out, etc. So started gathering kit together. I got in touch with an old friend of mine who I used to work with when I was a bit younger, and it turns out that he was doing exactly the same thing. He'd already been on one wild camp. So that was it. You know, we were talking pretty much most days, buying kit here, buying kit there off Amazon. Other suppliers are available. The different bits and bobs were turning up at the house, and I knew that I was going to get out and do it. And then came a challenge that was set on Facebook, and it was the Great British Camp House, it was called. And what that was a company, well, not a company, a guy set up a Facebook page and a Just Giving page, and basically got on all the outdoor UK groups promoting the idea of let's all camp out in our gardens. And to do so, you have to pay a pitch fee. And the pitch fee would be to donate to this charity. And it's for the NHS. It's our National Health Service in the UK. So luckily, I had all this new kit, and I managed to give it a shakedown in my back garden. So that happened. And then from there, you know, we sorted a couple of little camps out, and an opportunity came up where I had to go and work up in Scotland for work. And unfortunately, all the hotels, B&Bs, etc. were closed. And I had all this new kit.
I saw this video. don't give too much away. I want to talk about this a little bit later.
Okay, no worries. We'll hold it there. It there on that.
Very good. Yeah. Hey, I've got some questions, Sean. Now, first of all, you talk about the Great British Camp Out. In my mind, I'm envisioning Paul Hollywood and Prue kind of organizing this whole thing with Noel Fielding kind of jumping around in the background.
Yeah.
Not related to the Great British Bake Off.
I think the guy who created it got the idea from that, the name from there. But and it definitely helped. They made an absolute fortune. They made a couple of £100,000, I believe. I'll have to check up on it and see where they are with it. But yeah, they just took the name.
Oh yeah, you start off with Great British and you automatically go to the show. So
exactly.
Very good.
Exactly.
So are you in Wales now? Is that where you live?
No. No, well, I live on the border sort of on the border. It's about, I'd say, 5-7 miles from the border of Wales and England. So I'm English born and bred. But we do have really easy access into Wales and Snowdonia.
Got it.
And whatnot. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's closed at the moment, Wales. And if you're aware of that. So, yeah, we've got no access at the minute.
Yeah. Yeah. So where did you grow up? Where were you raised? What city?
Place called Ellesmere Port. It's like a working man's town. Oil refineries, car manufacturer there. Not really much in the way of the great outdoors. You know, you have to travel for any sort of mountains. Not too far from where I am now. But again, it's traveling into Snowdonia or to the Peak District. Or if you've got a bit longer, let's travel up to the lake. So never really had any sort of great walks. And I guess that's probably why it's took until now for me to get into this hobby and sport.
Mm-hmm. Any kids?
Yeah, got a 5-year-old daughter, Amelie. We took her on her first. I took her on her first summit last week. Nothing massive. It was a little hill mountain called Mam Tor, but it has a peak on it. There's some photos over on my Instagram channel of her stood on top of the trig point, and she loved it. Yeah, so little Amelie, she'll be a future explorer.
Nice. Get her hooked early. Very good.
I will.
As you are accumulating all the gear, the bits and bobs, as you said, and it's arriving in the mail, I heard you refer to the missus. What does the missus think? What does Mrs. Sean think of this whole endeavor?
Right. So the wife, Claire, she was supportive. She was supportive of it. I've always been sort of like an extreme hobbyist. I'll pick something up. I'll look at something and think, I want to do that. And I'll go out. And I'll get the gear. So motocross, for example, motocross. I went out, got the bike, got all the gear, did it for a year, and then thought, I've kind of reached my limit here. I'm a bit bored of this. And then that went for something else. Now, she thought this would probably be the same with the hiking and the wild camping. However, I've not got bored, and I can never ever see myself getting bored because there's so many legs off this hobby, whether it's you know, grade one scrambles or ice climbing or, you know, abseiling or super long adventures. I think this hobby is the hobby for me. It's one that, you know, you can't get bored of. So yeah, she's very supportive. She bought me my new sleep system, funnily enough, for Christmas and my birthday, which is on Sunday. So I've got the sleep mat for Christmas and the sleeping bag for my birthday. But yeah, she's supportive. And funnily enough, this Christmas she actually asked for hiking gear. So yeah, mate, it's worked. It's spread through the family, and it's just a great way to get out with the family, isn't it? You know. She's got a really nice pair of Salomon 40 GTX boots and full get-out mountain gear, and yeah, she likes it. It's good.
Nice. You know, you said a couple things that really resonated with me. One is that you're an extreme hobbyist. I have literally characterized myself with those same words, an extreme hobbyist. I get a hold of something and just stick with it, and really dive deep into it. So that's pretty funny. Yeah. You're going to fit in just fine here.
Yeah, that's cool. That's fine.
Now, you mentioned ice climbing. Is that really a possible offshoot for you?
No, maybe. who knows? Never say never. I look at ice climbing as probably the most extreme you can go within our hobby. It's certainly an offshoot of our hobby.
Yeah.
At the moment, I'm an unfit early 30s, something that loads a big backpack up and sort of goes on a trail and camps and drinks beer. But you know, this year coming for me is all going to be about, you know, getting fit and challenging myself. So all I'd say is never say never. I'm a real kit geek. So you know, as I start delving into different bits of kit, who knows where it's going to go. I certainly want to, I want to see myself doing this sort of stuff for the rest of my life. So it could happen, but you definitely need a lot of training.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned offshoots, so many offshoots, the ice climbing being the one extreme. You've of course got just the, you know, day hiking. You've got through hiking or section hiking. Yeah. You've got bouldering.
Yeah.
Mountaineering.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of different things you can do. And I've talked to a variety of people. I talked to one guy a few weeks ago who, pretty incredible guy, pretty incredible story. He is the only person to have been to the South Pole, the North Pole, and the top of Mount Everest in 1 year.
Wow.
Eric Larson.
I told you. See me, I'm just a small fry compared to some of your guests.
But no, fair play. Just as an example of, you know, where this can lead you. I mean, polar expeditions and standing on top of, you know, the world, basically.
Exactly.
I told him I had never had anybody on the show who had been on top of Everest, and if he could share that story with us as you know, the final day when he got to the very top, and it was pretty crazy. Yeah, really, really.
I'll have a look out for that. What episode is that, by the way, for your viewers and for me?
It is season 2, episode... Oh, geez, I got to go back here.
I don't mean to get you here. Sorry, what's his name?
Eric Larson.
Eric Larson.
Season 2, episode 6. It comes out on February 20th.
Right, brilliant.
Yep, and for our listeners who are tuned in, they know that today they're listening to season 2, episode 11, which is going to come out on March 27th.
Cool.
All right. Okay. Well, I kind of got us derailed there. What were we talking about?
That was me. No. That was me. Just sort of offshoots, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I definitely see the next sort of offshoot me doing will be, you know, mountaineering to an extent. I'm looking at, like I say, I'm new to this hobby. I'm new to all the groups on Facebook, and I'm seeing, you know, people coming alive this time of year when the snow falls on the mountains, and they love nothing more than chucking a pair of, you know, graded boots on with crampons and an ice axe. And you know, I don't have that kit. It's not going to happen this year, but it's certainly, I can see myself coming next year when I've been able to accumulate that sort of kit, that'll definitely go out and give it a go. So yeah, it's just about, you know, personal development, isn't it? You know, you want to try and push yourself to different things. So yeah, what a hobby.
Yep. And so again, what was the inspiration? What was the little voice that whispered in your head and said, hey, let's throw 35, 40 pounds on my back and go out and walk for miles on end and sleep on the ground? I mean, what was the inspiration that got you going?
So it basically, it all falls back to one YouTuber and my old boss as well, my old manager. So my old manager, a friend of mine, Reg, he started getting into this wild camping thing when I was working for him a good few years ago. And I thought, what are you doing? You know what I mean? And he said, hey, check out this guy on YouTube. His name's Hayes Outdoors. Just watch his videos.
Yes. I've watched his videos. I've reached out to him, but he has not responded. He's pretty incredible.
He's, so in a way, like without fanboying, I'd say that Hayes Outdoors has been the inspiration really for what I do. I think I like his video style. It's no nonsense, very laid back. He does some incredible things. He goes to some brilliant locations, and you know, everything that he does, you know, I see a bit of fun in as well. So it was kind of down to him. I think the same for I told you about my old work colleague who got back into the beginning of this year. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of been on pretty much every adventure with me. We've done this hobby together. His name's Die Outdoors. Check him out on Insta as well. but he was the same, yeah. So inspired by the same guy, Hayes Outdoors. So he's quite it's a big influence in the UK community, you know, because he doesn't just do the mountaineering. It's the bushcraft in the woods with your hammock. And again, that's something else that I do. I do, you know, a bit of both. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just, I think just the inspiration was watching him having fun. And I thought that was brilliant. So yeah.
I've watched quite a few of his videos. He seems to be in some pretty remote locations, beautiful locations, and around lakes and ponds, and he'll go swimming. And
wild swimming.
I have to think that water is pretty damn cold.
Yeah. Funnily you should say that. I was challenged recently by another YouTuber. There's a challenge going on at the minute. It's just about picking up momentum on YouTube amongst the UK outdoors people, and it's basically the cold water challenge. Now, Hazy has been doing this for yonks. Well, a guy called JRP Outdoors set this challenge, and basically he challenged anybody to spend 30 seconds underwater outdoors at this time of year. So you're talking probably 4 degrees centigrade. I don't know if you can convert that 4 to 5 degrees centigrade.
Yeah, the conversion is damn cold.
Yeah, damn cold. So, he tagged a couple of people, and I basically got tagged off that. So I had to do that the other day. So 30 seconds in a freezing cold river the other day. So that, the video's up on the channel there, and it's something I'm going to continue doing. It's supposed to be really beneficial for the body. They even say it reverses the aging process. Now, I don't know how true that is. If it does that, I'm certainly willing to, you know, try and get rid of the past 10 years.
Yeah, my son was telling me about the benefits of taking cold showers, and he's going to do it every day for a month. I'm not sure how far he got, but he didn't convince me to do it. So
no, it's exactly the same thing. I think there's a guy out there, I've not researched him too deep, but there's a guy called Wim Hof.
Yes.
He's, if you've heard of him, yeah. It's all kind of based around his theories, and all I can say is it was freezing cold.
Wim Hof, his Instagram account is bonkers. He's out there in just shorts out in, it seems like, Arctic conditions, sitting in the snow, you know, having a good time.
That's it.
Crazy stuff.
I need to have a go at that. That'd certainly make my videos interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I want to see that. Your next video, I want to see you just in some shorts sitting in some snow. So.
Right. We'll try that on Wednesday.
Nice. Now you said, is it Dave Outdoors or Outdoors Dave?
What? My friend?
Yes.
It's Di. So it's the Welsh nickname for Dave. So D-A-I.
Okay.
Di. And then it's Outdoors UK. He's my real, real good buddy, Di. We go out on all these adventures together. We plan them, and he's over on Instagram. He doesn't do the YouTube, but he does feature in quite a few of my videos. He's a good laugh.
I've seen him in your videos, and I thought I couldn't get the name quite right, and so I did a lookup of Outdoors Dave on YouTube. Yeah, and there's a guy out there named Outdoors Dave. I thought maybe that was him, but obviously not.
So that's another friend of mine. Dave Outdoors.
Dave Outdoors. There you go.
Yeah, that's another friend of mine. So funnily enough, me and Dave have been out on a camp and collaborated on a YouTube video. Okay. We went to the Peak District, yeah. But yeah, he's another good guy, Dave. Yeah, he's doing well.
Nice. All right, so hey, let's talk about this whole concept of wild camping. Now, yeah. I want to understand wild camping, because we don't refer to it as wild camping in America. I just want to see if what are the differences, or I mean, what are the rules in the UK about camping, and what is wild camping?
Okay, so I guess in America you probably just call it camping.
Yeah.
So in the UK, basically, there's not a lot of open access land where you can just go and set up and pitch up your tent and camp. There just isn't a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Even our national parks mostly are owned by farmers. The national parks do own certain sections of that land. So essentially, in England, there's only really one place where you can wild camp legally, and that's a place called Dartmoor, which is down in the southwest of the UK. However, in certain places like, you know, the Peak District and the Lake District, especially the Lake District, with bylaws which allow you to camp, and it's tolerated. And it's usually above the highest fell wall, away from a certain water course. And the idea is that you pitch late and then you leave early. You leave no trace. That is the most important sort of ethos amongst wild campers. Definitely leave no trace. And especially up on the fells, no fires, just, you know, don't have any fires up on the fells. So that's kind of the rule that we follow, is leave no trace. It's kind of stretched over to the Peak District as well, although there is no official bylaws in the Peak District for that. It's kind of tolerated. Now, Scotland, there is no trespass law.
Hang on, Sean. What does kind of tolerated mean? I mean, you set up, you pitch your tent, and you hunker down for the night. What are the odds that someone's going to come by and say, "Hey, you can't do this here. You get pack up, get out of here." Is that
it? Can happen.
Yeah. Real, okay.
It can happen. You know, these national parks have rangers, and if they do come along and ask you to move, then okay, you pack up and you move on. You sort of make your excuses, apologize, and off you go. Thankfully, I've not had it happen to me. I have heard of others have it happen, but none of my friends have had that happen yet, you know. And between us, we're out quite often. I guess you just got to be sensible. You've got to get somewhere, you know, get up as high as you can, sort of away from view of any buildings, really out in the sticks, as we call it, out in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. That's what you've got to do. So yeah, that's the UK. Same with Wales. Wales, it's not legal to wild camp in Wales, but if you're up in the mountains, you're away from anyone, you leave no trace. I guess the question is, have you really been there? If there's no evidence of it, you know?
That sounds like a very metaphysical question. Sorry, I cut you off when you were talking about Scotland.
Oh, yeah. So Scotland, basically, they have the right to roam. There's no trespass law whatsoever in Scotland. So you can essentially, providing you're not causing criminal damage or anything like that, you can set up camp pretty much anywhere. There are a couple of places where you're not allowed to. And I believe there's two places, Loch Lomond, and you'll have to bear with me on this, I think it's the Trossachs. But there is a permit system there. And the idea is, behind that, is to stop like the place being over camp. Mm-hmm. Because they're both extremely picturesque places. Loch Lomond is going to be getting done this year by myself and Di. I'm going to try and do like a kayak camp out there on one of the islands. But you have to have a permit. And I think that's rightly so. It's just such a beautiful place. You don't want the whole perimeter of this lake being surrounded by tents free of charge. So yeah, they permitted that. But other than them two places, go wherever you please, pitch your camp, enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I like that philosophy. Right to roam in Scotland.
Yeah, the right to roam. Yeah, so the right to roam is something actually from England. So with like public footpaths, and we do have footpaths and trails and whatnot. So I believe the right to roam, there was a march many, many years ago. I'm not prepared for this conversation on this part, but it all began with a march essentially on Kinder Scout, which is one of the local sort of mountains by us. It's only 600 meters. But yeah, they all had a big march and just walked through fields and whatnot and protested against the trespass law, that we don't have the right to roam within our own country. And off the back of that, we've now got, you know, hundreds of footpaths. You can go and walk on wherever you want. So yeah, but I need to do some more research on that one.
No, that's good. That's good. And what are some of the long trails in the UK? I know that you mentioned Snowdonia Way, and I talked to PJ who did Snowdonia Way. What other types of multi-day through hikes are available in the UK?
In the UK, there's loads. You know, I was looking at a map yesterday again on on Facebook. It seems all I do, especially around Christmas, when nothing changes. Scan through the groups on Facebook. Uh-huh, yeah. And this guy created a map you can download, and it's got all the big multi-day hikes on there. But there's some standout ones for me that I would be interested in. Is definitely the Wainwright's Coast to Coast. That's definitely one that I do want to go and do. They say to do it between sort of 10 to 14 days of hiking and wild camping along the way. It goes from on the west coast up in the Lake District over to the east coast. I want to say it ends in Whitby, a place called Whitby. And the idea is you pick up a stone on the beach that you leave in the Lake District. You carry that stone all the way across, and then you drop that stone on the beach on the other side. Nostalgic, eh? So that's one that I want to do. It's around.
You're gonna carry an extra rock for 14 days. I mean, that goes against the whole ultralight camping deal.
It does. I don't know how I'm going to carry 2 weeks worth of beer in my back either, but I'll get around to that. So that's one of them. Another guy that I speak to through YouTube, he's just on the West Highland Way, which looks like a good trail. He did that. There's lots. You need this map, basically. This map has got every single one of them on it. One that I would like to do is the Anglesey Coastal Path. So Anglesey is not so much mountainous trail, it's a coastal path again. Mm-hmm. And that basically goes around the whole perimeter of Anglesey. So Anglesey is like a small island off the coast of Wales. I've done a camp there recently, and it's just absolutely breathtaking. You wouldn't think you were in the UK when you're on that coast. It's beautiful. So maybe one day, once I've built up my leg a little bit.
Nice. I'll tell you what, we're going to get an image of that map, and we'll post it on social media leading up to this episode so people can reference that as they're listening.
Cool. I'll find it again and send it over to you.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear about Sean's first wild camping experience. And I understand there is a bit of a story to that. So you're not going to want to miss that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Sean from the Sean Explores YouTube channel and Instagram page, and you're listening to the John Freaking Muir Pod.
And welcome back, talking to Sean of Sean Explores. And we had just gone through a bit about wild camping in the UK, and I want to hear from you about your first wild camping experience. I understand there's a story or two in that experience.
Yeah, so basically, I mentioned earlier, obviously, my career and whatnot, and I've worked in engineering management, managing a team, and that involved looking after a team over the north of England and Scotland as well. So we're here, we're in lockdown, the whole country's in lockdown. I've been recently getting all this kit together. So I've got all this kit ready to go, and basically a problem happened on one of my sites up in Scotland that the guys couldn't fix. So it basically meant that really I needed to get up there and give the lads a hand and go and see how they're getting on and sort them out. But unfortunately, all the hotels and bed and breakfasts where I was usually staying were closed. So I kind of had a bit of a brainwave and thought, okay, what I can do here is I can use my kit, I can get my first wild camp, and essentially I've got an excuse to be up there wild camping. So I got my bag packed, chucked it in the back of the van, went up to Scotland, did my work. And then once work had finished, I thought, right, we need to find a spot. We need to find a place to go. So after visiting Asda, buying a steak and a disposable barbecue and whatnot, I wasn't fully set up for this wild camping experience. Definitely knew it was what I wanted to do, but I needed to kind of, make the best of a bad situation, really. So funnily enough, it's actually the name of your podcast, the John Freaking Muir podcast. Is it named after John Muir from the UK at all?
Absolutely. Born in Scotland, came over here, father of the national parks.
There you go. Yeah. So the John Muir Way in Scotland goes from the west coast and actually ends in a place called Dunbar on the east coast. Okay. And Dunbar was where I did my first wild camp on the beach on Dunbar. So that was the place I found a place on the beach near Dunbar. Took a little bit of a hike, set my tent up, got some photos for Instagram. Absolutely brilliant. And I thought, right, it's time to cook this beautiful steak on this disposable barbecue. So did a little bit of looking around for some driftwood, got a load of driftwood together because I thought, I'm definitely going to have a fire afterwards. Of course I am. So I started cooking my steak and whatnot. Everything was going great. I started to run out of driftwood. So again, went on the beach looking for driftwood, found a load, and I found this one piece of, it was strange really, it was treated timber that must have washed up. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, that'll do, that'll burn for a while. So yeah, so I put that on the fire and it started spitting as you do. None of the other wood spat at all, apart from this one bit of standout timber. It started spitting anyway. So I thought, all right, we'll take that off, chuck it off the fire. And funnily enough, obviously I mentioned I've been inspired to get to do all this kind of things by a guy called Hayes Outdoors on YouTube. I thought, you know what? I'm going to practice filming myself and talking into the camera. So if you watch that video, the very beginning bit, you'll see the fire glowing off my face and then talking into the camera. That was never ever supposed to be released for, you know, the public to see. It was for me to play back and think, I wonder if I'd be any good at this YouTube stuff. Uh-huh. Anyway, I digress. So eventually, as the evening went on, I decided to retire into my tent. And I noticed that my sleep mat was flat. There was no air in it. It'll be the valve. You know, the valve's been funny on it. It's let all the air out. So it starts blowing into this air mat, you know. And not the easiest of things to blow up with by breath. So I'm blowing into this air mat. And I start hearing a hissing noise. And I'm thinking, oh, great. It's punctured. Oh, right, okay. Well, no worries. I've got the puncture repair kit with me. Let's have a little look. So I find this puncture. And it's actually a burn hole about the size of for UK listeners, 5 pence piece, I guess, over there. I don't know, a dime or whatever you call it. Like a nice big burn hole in it. And I was like, how the heck has this happened? Anyway, set about fixing that up in me cramped little tent in the dark. Managed to fix that. And as I go to pull my sleep mat back over, I noticed a bit of a rough patch, as it were. So I had a look at it, and lo and behold, directly above where the hole in the sleep mat was, there was a hole in the sleeping bag in both layers. So I looked up, and there's a big hole in my tent as well. So what had happened with that lovely bit of timber that I thought, this will burn great, because it spat off an ember, red hot, landed on the tent, went through both layers of my tent, both layers of my sleeping bag, and through my air mat. So obviously, when that happened, I decided, right, okay, let's film this. So I just filmed myself talking, what I found and whatnot, and yeah, how the camp kind of went. Posted it on YouTube, and I think it's my first ever YouTube post. It got like 1,000 views in 24 hours. So I thought, right, okay, I'm a YouTuber. This is what we've got to do. This is what's going to happen for the next year. And yeah, everything's kind of stemmed off that, really. So that's pretty much my first wild camp. Ended in disaster, but it didn't put me off.
It ended in disaster, but also propelled you into YouTube stardom.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as stardom yet. You know, I'm doing okay on it. My video quality's definitely improved and whatnot. But yeah, it's definitely got me on the road to starting something that has turned out that I absolutely love doing. You know, it's a big part of what I do. It's a big part of the reason why I get out there is to make the videos, as well as obviously for my own personal development, well-being and whatnot. So
yeah, you have combined two hobbies into one, right? Yeah. You've got your outdoor experiences and your accompanying YouTube channel. So exactly. As a serial hobbyist, you've checked a couple boxes there. Very good.
There you go. That's probably why I'm not getting bored, because I've got two things to go at.
let's talk about that. Your first wild camping experience, your first time taking your gear out. I know, I remember that feeling. I get to set up the gear, I get to sleep out.
out there, get to experience it for the first time, and you send a burning ember through the top of your tent, through your sleeping bag, down into your sleeping pad. Do you have that same gear? Or did you have to replace it all?
No, so I was quite lucky, really. Like I say, the sleep mat came with a repair kit, so I used that on it. I just left the top of the tent open to the elements and my sleeping bag for that night. It was fine. It was okay. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing a bit of research online for, like, obviously technical fabrics and how you can repair them and whatnot. And I found this, you probably know about it. I found this product called Gear Aid Tenacious Tape. So basically that repaired my sleeping bag with a little cotton wool thing in it. So I used that up until my last camp, which was a couple of weeks ago. So that worked out well. And my tent, again, got a patch on the top of it. I've since shifted that tent on to a friend who's bought it. He's happy. So everything got repaired. It was,
okay.
You know, it was an absolute disaster. My kit wasn't holeless and shiny, but it still served me well for the rest of this year and everything I've done. Yeah. So, yeah. But everything's been replaced now. So,
yeah, it's probably a good thing you didn't come home from that trip and say, "Hey, Claire, I've got to replace everything. Sorry, I got to get all new stuff."
Yeah. I know she'd have gone mad, but I've actually have replaced everything since. So there we go.
Yeah, very good. Now, another thing I've noticed from your videos is that you eat pretty well on the trail.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we eat well.
So you had a steak on that particular trip.
Yeah.
Another video that I watched, you had a steak on top of a mountain. I think it was with Outdoor Dave or Dave Outdoors.
Die Outdoors.
Die Outdoors. Looked like a pretty big juicy steak that you guys were having. And then I think the first video on your channel that I watched was you riding a bike out into the middle of nowhere and then cooking up this massive hamburger with two patties. So that was pretty impressive. You eat pretty well on the trail.
We do, yeah, we do. Like I say, the longer trails, like the big sort of 18-mile trails, 20-mile trails and whatnot, if we're out hiking all day, we'll tend to go for like what we call a boil bag meal or like a dehydrated meal.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't really enjoy them. They serve a purpose. What we like, we like steaks and we like to drink red wine and things like that. And I guess if you've got the energy to be able to carry it up there, it does bode a bit of extra weight. It just kind of adds to the whole experience. If, you know, I'm out here in this, you know, big area of mountains, especially in the Lake District and whatnot, and I'm eating a steak, and that does it for me. It does. I think it's kind of combining the two hobbies of bushcraft and mountain camping, and just kind of, you know, a bit of a crossover, really. So yeah, we do eat well, and we do carry a lot of booze as well sometimes as well. So. Yeah, that's just how we do it. A lot of other UK campers do the same sort of thing.
So is your YouTube channel, it's Outdoors, is it a cooking channel as well? This is how you cook an outdoor steak?
No, it may be, you've given me inspiration there. I've done the one cooking video, which, as you mentioned, that hamburger.
Yeah.
I was actually out doing, I had no big trips planned or anything. And I thought, you know what, I've got this beautiful forest on my doorstep. I'm seeing a lot of questions about hammock camping and whatnot, and I've learned quite a bit about hammock camping over the last year. We've done a fair few. Again, my friend Die Outdoors, he's given me tips. I've given him tips. You receive tips off people offline. So I thought, what I'm going to do, I'm going to make an instructional video on how to set up a hammock and what to buy, what modifications, etc., and basically what you can do. So the reason why I did the cooking on that day was I thought, well, I don't want to go out to the woods and just set up a hammock for camping. I thought, And video that. Let's make two videos, and I'll get a really nice juicy burger out of it. So yeah, that's kind of how that happened. But we have done other cooking videos as well. So I did initially set up a video series called Hot Mountain Meal Hacks. Now that's kind of sort of died a death. I've done two episodes for that. First episode, I cooked a bag of microwave rice in a jet boil. That was really easy. But the idea behind it was how to create a substantial meal. £2, take it up in the mountains. So that was pretty good. That might come back next year. I did a Philly cheesesteak baguettes for under £2 per head. That was a good video and a good nice. Strand. So yeah, we'll see. There may be more cooking. There'll definitely be more adventures.
Very good. Hey, we've kind of segued into your YouTube channel. What kind of content can folks find on your YouTube channel?
So it's basically it's me, a couple of friends. I do solo hikes and camping, and you know, I mentioned earlier, outdoor swimming is another thing, kayaking, just that sort of stuff. Really, it's watching me getting out and about and taking you to beautiful places. And the idea behind it is just to show that, you know, a not particularly fit early 30s year old man can do these kind of things and get out there, and just to inspire other people, really. I think I'm going to say this because it's my own content, but I think it's inspirational for people who wouldn't normally think of getting out there. I think if they see me doing it, they're going to think, you know what, I can do that. If he can do that, I can do that. So that's the kind of content that's on there at the minute. Just beautiful places in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing, and just
You've got your outdoor adventures. You've got food prep, as you mentioned. Of course, there's all kinds of humor in your episodes. I really enjoy that.
Oh yeah.
And anything on gear? Have you done any gear breakdowns or analysis?
Yeah, so I did in the beginning. Again, as I mentioned, it was kind of an accident. The first wild camp and making this YouTube was kind of an accident. So literally within a week of posting that video and it going crazy on YouTube, but you know, for someone with no subscribers, I went out and did basically a video on my beginner's wild camping kit. It was just literally a loadout video out in the trees, in the fields close to me, just showing people the route I'd gone down, what I'd chosen, the reason why I'd done it, the research that I did behind it. So there's going to be a lot more coming soon. And the reason why I've not done that is because I'm not a fan of these sort of unboxing review videos. You know, someone does a review on something that they've just took out the box. I want to be able to give a review on something to people that's an honest, tried and tested review that I've used in the field. So yeah, there's plenty more of that to come. And by the time this episode's out, yeah, there will be quite a few gear review videos on there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. So you've been doing this for 9 months. What changes have you seen in yourself since you've undertaken this new hobby?
Fitness. So fitness has definitely improved. That's not through changing my diet or anything like that. I just tend to go out hiking a lot more. I'm always seem to be on an uphill slope. And I get up them slopes so much easier now. And that's just by, you know, getting out and doing it. So that's a big change that I've seen in myself. Another one that I've seen in myself is it's kind of looking at the mental health side of things. I do suffer with something called SAD, seasonal affective disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, in the UK, where we live in the UK, obviously, we go from having, you know, 8 hours of darkness in the summer to in the winter, we only get 8 hours of daylight. So that's like a big change, you know. And I've had to take, for the past few years, really strong vitamin D tablets, which have to an effect counteracted that kind of sort of not depression, but yeah, I guess it is. It's a way of calling it depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now this year, we're getting out so much and being out in the open and going on these adventures and just putting myself in beautiful places and being in the outdoors and even going on these hikes, on short hikes in the day in winter. I've not had to take any of them tablets, and I can honestly say I'm the happiest I've ever been. So that's a massive change in me since I've took on this hobby. And it's definitely another reason why I'll continue doing it. You know, it's just the benefits to this kind of thing, hiking, and, you know, even the massive trails that you guys are doing. It's all about the mind in my eyes, the mind and the physical well-being, you know. So those are the biggest changes I've seen.
Yeah, there's definitely a transformational aspect to nature. I mean, I think the more time you spend out in it, yeah, the better off you are. I've talked to a number of folks who do the long trails out here in America, and usually it's people dealing with stuff. You know, it's vets that have come back from combat who are sorting through their problems and their issues. It's other people that have gone through major life transformations and they've lost somebody, or their career has taken a sudden turn and they spend months on end out in nature and come out better for it. So it's definitely huge impact.
Yeah.
Huge positive impact. Is. Yeah.
definitely is. I mean, in a community, again, the UK sort of YouTube community, there's quite a few ex-military guys, and again, on Insta, and that kind of backs up what you're saying there. You know, I don't know whether it's the sunlight that you're getting, you're actually seeing the whole day, whether it's what you're seeing, the peace and tranquility. I haven't worked out how it's doing, what it's doing to me, but like I say, I mean, we're in the middle of winter now. We've only had 8 hours of dark, 8 hours of sunlight today, and I'm as happy as Larry, you know. So the only thing I've changed this year is having this hobby, isn't it?
You're as happy as who?
Larry. Is that not an American thing? Happy as Larry.
Have not heard that. I have not heard that. I've heard, hey, Bob's your uncle, but I have not heard happy as Larry. So
happy as Larry. There you go. There's a new one for you.
do you know who is Larry?
That's generally the question that follows when you say happy as Larry. They say, who's he? And I don't know who he is. It's just the UK saying it must be.
Nice. All right. How about some of your other adventures? Have you taken some longer trips, any multi-day trips?
Yeah, I've done a couple. So obviously I did the Anglesey Coastal Path. Again, I was out with Di. Now, the idea behind that was we wanted to get involved in a bit of fishing, coastal fishing. While we were there, we wanted to get a catch and cook and whatnot. So we did basically the northwest side of Anglesey. We dropped off at a place called Innisty Fiddlin. Now, I can't spell that for you, it's Welsh. But it's called Innisty Fiddlin, yeah, and it's an absolutely beautiful place. It's like a cove with caves in the rocks. There's an island that sort of protrudes out. It's just a very small, very tall island that protrudes out. Again, you wouldn't think it was the UK. It's absolutely beautiful. So we went from there, and then we hiked around.
Sounds like a Game of Thrones setting.
Yeah, do you know what? Yeah, you could put it as that. Yeah, you could do. So back to the Anglesey Coastal Path, we did a fair bit of hiking there. I like the Lake District. Have you heard of Scarfell Pike? It's the highest mountain in England, Scarfell Pike. So that area there is my favourite. So, you know, we go on our long hikes up around that way. Play a place called Wasdale. You've got a lake called Wastwater, and at the head of Wastwater, you've got a place called Wasdale, and from there, the trail begins for the biggest mountain in England, which is Scarfell Pike. So, I don't know, it's a special place. You've got the deepest body in England right next to the highest mountain in England. So, it's the biggest sort of thing. But, I did Scarfell Pike on my own. That was very challenging, I must admit. I think that was only my second or third wild camp. Loaded up my backpack and just, drove there and said to the missus, I'll see you in a couple of days sort of thing. That was a big challenge, that. We've done that. We've done, obviously, Snowdon route. We've done Snowdon's the biggest mountain in Wales. So we did. We went from Penyffan to Llanberis. So up and over the top. We're not talking multi-day here. There will be some to come this year.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. What's next for Sean?
Right. Okay. So I've been asked to do, basically asked to get involved in a charity hike. It's for Clatterbridge Cancer Care. It's basically a cancer care unit around the northwest where we live. There's a girl who's a friend of a friend who unfortunately has developed cancer. I think it's anal cancer. So we're working on that charity. Also, my father-in-law, he also passed away, unfortunately, at the beginning of the year through cancer, and he was in Clatterbridge. So it's another reason why I've kind of jumped on this challenge. It's not so much a trail. It's a lot of road plodding. But what we're going to do is we're going to hike for 3 days from Chester to Mount Snowdon in Wales to Snowdon, and then summit on the final day. So it's like 66 miles in 3 days with a summit at the end. So that's something that by the time this is out, the sort of fundraising will be in full swing and it'll be announced and all whatnot. So yeah, we've got that to come. That's going to be a challenge.
66 miles in 3 days. That's a good clip.
Yeah. It's not bad. I think it's a realistic challenge to set myself. But you know, with this, again, with the YouTube and the Instagram and sort of gaining this sort of, I don't know if you call it a following. It's a bit cringe-worthy really, but people wanting to watch my sort of videos and people being inspired by what I'm doing. And now I want to use that for charity now. You know, it's, I want to make it worthwhile and sort of, you know, achieve something from it. So, like I mentioned earlier, the coast to coast, the Wainwright's coast to coast, mm-hmm. that's a 200 mile trek. You know, I definitely want to sort of work my way up to that. And this year is going to be about getting myself into a position where I'm fit enough and healthy enough to be able to take on them challenges.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about your fitness. What is your level of fitness right now? And where are you now and where do you want to be?
I'd say not great. I can climb a mountain, but we're talking a UK mountain. I've got dodgy knees, a dodgy knee, should I say. I get pains when I walk downhill. I've spoke to a physio about that. I've been assessed by a physio, small assessment visit, a friend.
And what do they think it is? What's wrong with your dodgy knee?
I've got a flat foot.
A flat foot?
Yeah.
That impacts your knee.
Yeah, so she was explaining it to me. It's dead interesting. So with the flat foot, essentially my ankle rolls in. So if you haven't got that arch and your ankle's where it should be, your ankle rolls in, and then if you look at your leg, the lower leg, you've got two bones coming up, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bone on the right-hand side, I don't know if it's that tibula or fibula, essentially, if your arch of your foot is pressed down, your ankle's rolled in, that bone at your knee joint is grinding because it's not aligned. So essentially, well, I've got some exercises to do, which I need to do, and get some insoles as well. And she's quietly confident that that'll solve all my issues because I can climb uphill all day, no problem. It's just the downhill. So yeah, that's kind of where my physical issues lie, which I'm going to sort out. And then in terms of my
you don't need a foot reconstruction surgery to install an arch in that foot.
No. Just chuck an insole in and do some foot exercises. Let's build up the muscles in that foot.
Okay.
She's quietly confident I can get into that sort of position. It's just exercises. Just to realign everything really. So I've got that. And then in terms of actual health, like I said, I kind of stumbled across this hobby and fell into the whole YouTube thing and kind of not changed my diet. I still drink, you know, still like to drink beer. I smoke, which is terrible. I know it's not good. So I've got those things to work on this year. Try and sort of stomp out. Don't get me wrong. We'll still be doing room reviews on the odd video and whatnot, but I'm definitely looking at getting some distance under my feet in the year to come. So yeah, it's all about working on fitness and maybe a bit of running from the nails and legs fit.
Okay. Very good. Hey, we're going to do an impromptu top five list here because okay. we're coming up on the, as we're recording now, we're coming up on the new year. And so it's a good time for kind of new year's resolutions. So let's talk about top five hiking destinations that Sean sees for himself as he continues this hobby. You know, where could this take you, Sean? Where do you want to end up? If you could pick top five hiking destinations.
Okay. Number one on the list is going to be Ben Nevis, Scotland. Simply because it's the only big peak in the UK that I've not done. I'm gutted I've not managed to get it in this year because I wanted to get all three done within a year, which is a big achievement for me. As I said, not that fit, but you know, it had been great. Fortunately, it hasn't happened, so that's number one next year for a bit of an achievement. It's a long drive up there. It requires, you know, it'd be like a 3-4 day trip just to get up there, climb up there, and explore a few other places. So that's definitely on the list. Next sort of trail that I'd like to do would be this. I don't know if you've heard of the Snowdon 3000s. It's essentially around Snow. It's in Snowdonia. It includes Snowdon and Trafan and whatnot. A lot of ridge walking. But the idea is that the total elevation over the course of this whole hike, which will take, I think it takes around 24 hours or whatever. But the idea is that the total ascent over the whole of the trek is 3,000 meters. So that's definitely one that will be a good test. And it's something I'd have to build up towards because there's certain sections of that are quite sketchy, you know, decent ridge walking, scrambling. So I'll have to go and do them myself first anyway. So there's that. And then from there, I don't know, there's a few different places. I guess, can I do five? I could, the West Island Way again, the one that I know about, I could do that again. Like I say, I want to involve a lot of charity in the things that I do. So these will be challenges for me, you know, to raise money for good causes. And then I'm not going to say five. I haven't got five, but I have got the pinnacle of what I want to achieve over the next 3 years. And that is Mount Kilimanjaro. Definitely, I want to go in, like, within the next 3 years, I want to get myself to a position where I can go and reach the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro. Now, I know there's you've got to be obviously fit to do this, and there's a lot of these guided tours, and you can go from any level from, you know, they have your kit set up for you when you get there and all that. I want to try and do it as minimal as possible. You know, I want a guide or whatever you call that, a Sherpa or whatever, but, right, you know, I want to carry my own weight up there. I want to be able to, you know, summit it under good guidance again, because the altitude sickness and whatnot. And that's probably on the list for the next 3 years.
All right. That's a good list. It's a good list. Any desire to do longer trails like the Camino?
Is that America?
No, Camino is Camino de Santiago is in Spain.
Oh, right. There is one, actually. There's one in Mallorca, and I wish I'd have wrote this down where it is. There's a trail, basically, that goes from Mallorca, the island of Mallorca, from the south to the top. Now, that I have spoke about that, actually, with my friend Di before in the past, that I think that would be a brilliant hike to do, especially with the challenges of the additional heat. We don't get a lot of heat in the UK. It's not that hot. But no, you know, certainly in the future, never say never. Let's see where this hobby takes me.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of different long trails out there, and they all have their own different personalities. Pacific Crest Trail goes from Mexico to Canada on the west side of the United States. And wow. It's 2,600 miles, and you are, you know, I don't think there's any shelters, any pre-built shelters out on the trail, maybe one or two in a section or two, but you know, you're responsible for everything. You got your sleep system, your tent, your food, water, everything. Then you have something like the Appalachian Trail, which goes from Georgia to Maine on the east coast of the United States. And there are huts, there are shelters built like every 20 miles or so on, nice, along this 2,200 mile trail. And so, I mean, you could spend a lot of your time indoors in a shelter, of course, sleeping with, you know, 15, 16 other hikers out there that you may or may not know. And then there's the Camino over in Spain. It follows the religious route of the pilgrims back in the day. And you sleep in hostels every night. I mean, you do your hiking, and then you go to a local pub or a restaurant, have your dinner, and then you sleep in a hostel, and then you get up and you do it again. So it's not the hardcore through hiking experience, but you still get to walk 20 miles a day and see some incredible scenery. So lots of different options out there.
Jeff, I think for me, the whole attraction to it is the backpacking side, being self-reliant. And now, don't get me wrong, the likes of the coast to coast that I know of here, it's a 10 to 14 day, these days you can do it in 200 miles. You have to stop off in towns on the way, obviously, to replenish like food and whatnot. And a lot of people do stay in pubs or B&Bs. But I think for me, I got into this hobby through the whole camping sort of thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I like kit, and I like being able to develop a kit through different bits and bobs and research, and being able to throw it all in my pack and maybe self-reliant with that and just be out there. You know, I've got to try it out a lot more because obviously the most I've done is like a two-day thing. But, you know, as things go on and, you know, as the fitness increases and the challenges that I've achieved have got bigger, then I guess my aspirations will grow with that as well. And then, you know, I will be looking at doing much bigger things. But, right, fair play to anyone who's done them sort of massive trails over there. That's some good going. Yeah.
I've got number five for you. You ready?
Go on.
Have you heard of the John Muir Trail?
Of course. I know Dunbar very, very well. I've camped there twice, and I worked there. Had a place there. Yeah.
No. So not the John Muir Way, but the John Muir Trail.
Okay. Where's that?
Okay, so I was telling you about the Pacific Crest Trail, right? Mexico to Canada, 2,600 miles. There is a subsection of the Pacific Crest Trail that is basically 211 miles, and it's in the Sierras, the Sierra Nevadas. It's a mountain range in California. Some of the most scenic beautiful, rugged country you'll ever see. High alpine lakes, far from, you know, your day or two, at least from hiking out in some sections to a town to get help or anything. But 211 miles, starts in Yosemite. Have you heard of Yosemite National Park?
I have heard of these places. Bear in mind, I've never been to the U.S. yet.
Right,
not been
right.
To America, so, but I have heard, yeah.
So the northern terminus is in Yosemite Valley, which is unbelievable. And the southern terminus of the trail is at the top of Mount Whitney, which is the highest mountain in the United States, the lower 48. It's at 14,505 feet.
Wow.
And so, So I'd encourage you to do a little homework, take a look at the John Muir Trail, 211 miles of wilderness heaven. And if that gets you motivated and you want to do that, you can stay here at my place and I'll drive you up to the southern terminus to start your hike.
Happy day. Have you done it yourself? Have you done that?
But I haven't done it in one fell swoop. I've done the southern half twice, which is about 125 miles. And then I've done sections to complete the rest of the northern half. So I have put my foot on every piece of the path, but just not all in one time. So,
well, respect though, mate. Respect for doing that. That's fantastic. I mean, like I said, the highest mountain I've been up is 1,100 meters. 11. I know we work in feet and meters, so 1,100 meters. And you know what? It was a challenge for my current fitness level, but I thought anyone could do that. I think it's when you start coming across this, look at the idea of there being some invisible force that can affect you, like altitude sickness, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what intrigues me to want to go and try. And I guess that's why, for me, Kilimanjaro is going to be, you know, one of the things that I want to do, and I'm going to work on for the next sort of 3 years pushing towards doing that. It's just, I want to put my body under that. Mm-hmm. I want to experience that. So, yeah, no, fair play. That's some effort.
Yeah. There are, I think, 6 or 7 mountain passes over 10,000 feet that you have to cross on the John Muir Trail. And if you want to check out my fledgling YouTube channel, the John Freaking Muir Pod YouTube channel, you can see some of the clips from that trail, as well as how Chopper earned his trail name when he was on the Mineral King Loop trail and had to be evacuated out. So,
Yeah. I'll get on that. I'll have a gander.
Good. All right. Hey, Sean, you know where we are?
What? Where are we?
We are at the time where I ask you for your pro tip insight of the week. What do you have for us?
Okay. So as you probably established.
For our listeners out there who didn't see what just happened, Sean took that piece of paper he's got in front of him. He flipped it over to the back page where he's got his pro tip all lined out. So I look like you got this planned.
it's not so much a pro tip. So obviously, as you probably established through this podcast, I'm not a pro. I don't claim to be a pro. I'm just a normal guy getting out there and filming it and putting it on YouTube to inspire others. So my tip is probably it's to the people who are looking at, you know, you look at these videos on they find themselves sat there every night watching YouTube videos, but they're actually not getting out. So basically, for me, my tip is going to be, it can only really be what I did, you know, start making lists whilst you're looking at these YouTube videos. Get into your mind exactly what it is you want to do. Do you want to go hiking? Do you want to go wild camping? Do you want to do some of the bigger trails? Find what niche it is that you want to get involved in, or understand what it is that excites you when you're watching these YouTube videos, or, you know, things on Netflix and whatnot. Start creating lists and then start getting your kit together. You know, you don't have to buy it all at once. I certainly didn't buy all mine at once. It was over a period of a few months. Mm-hmm. I started gathering certain things. And then once you've got your kit, plan your first wild camp, but don't do something silly like I did and go 200 miles away in Scotland when you're working away and all you've got is a cold van to rely on, which is a good hike away from you. Start looking for local places, I don't know, local woodland or, you know, a small hill, and get yourself out there and give your kit a shakedown before you do get out on the bigger adventures. Because if it does go wrong, you can always bail. And I guess that the top tip is, don't be scared to bail on a camp or a hike. Don't be scared to turn back, you know. I'm all for pushing myself and, you know, think of what people should push themselves. But, you know, if you've got an element of doubt in your mind, don't be scared to pack up and just turn around on your heels and head back.
Very good. Great pro tip. Excellent. Thank you. All right. But before we go, before we leave this week, we would be remiss if we did not talk about one of Sean's YouTube videos on his channel that has gotten, I think, the most amount of views of all your videos. And it has to do with a drone. What are you a drone pilot as well? Is that another hobby?
I'd say pilot loosely. I use the drone to get some of the aerial shots from the videos, get the, you know, cinematic footage over the mountains and whatnot. On this particular day, I was actually invited out by, we've mentioned his name, Dave Outdoors. He also has a YouTube channel, as we said. He was far more followers than me. And, you know, to be invited out by another guy who's sort of doing pretty well in it, it was great. So I decided to meet up with him in the Peak District. We walked over some hills and ended up at a place called Lady Bower Reservoir. Now, Lady Bower Reservoir is kind of unique because it has these overspill shafts. And the idea is, obviously, the reservoir is a dam holding back a load of water. When the level gets too high, the water falls through these huge holes, goes down some tunnels, and then out the other side of the dam. So, you know, to stop it going over the top of it. So when we got there, being macho Sean Explorers that I thought I was, I'll get the drone out and I'll have a little look in them tunnels. So I got my drone over there, hovering over the top of these overspill shafts. And I started to descend within the tunnel. Dave had his drone flying out over the other side, and you know, we were having lots of fun until I heard a bit of a crackle and a crackle on my transmission, and bang, the drone just flew into the sidewall of this vertical tunnel. It came back, it sort of balanced out, and then bang, straight again, and it was gone. It just, I lost it down a 70-foot shaft. I probably only took it out on two outings as well. It was a DJI Mavic Mini, you probably know about them. Other drones are available. So I was just in turmoil. I didn't know what to do with this, you know, this really expensive drone that I bought. I shouted Dave over, and we're weighing it up. We think, what can we do? You know, like, it's in the there's a hole in the middle of this reservoir that, you know, you've got to swim across to this thing if it was going to do it. And then how are you going to get down 70 foot? So anyway, in true Englishman fashion, we decided to go for a pint in the pub. So we went for a pint. Had a couple of pints. We sat there wondering what to do, and I thought, you know, I'm gonna have to Google these tunnels and just see if there's any information on these tunnels on the internet and whatnot. And I found out that the there's an exit hole for these pipes. Obviously, what you FN has an entry, Astor has an exit point. So that kind of gave me the idea of where it was. So we decided after a couple of pints to go on this recce mission. And basically, that's what that video is about. It's me retrieving my drone from incredibly dark reservoir tunnels 70 feet below the ground. Let's just say that was an unexpected adventure, and it's proved to be possibly one of my better videos.
Was it a successful recovery mission?
You'll have to watch the video.
Okay, wow. Keep us hanging. I see a trend. I see a trend, Sean, and that is that new gear doesn't do well with you. Your first time with the tent and sleeping bag and the sleeping pad, and now your drone that you've just used once or twice. Any new gear you have should be very nervous when you take it out.
It should be, but for the viewers, I think, I guess, what they think is if he gets some new kit, he's certainly going to put it through its paces.
That's right. Fantastic story. I'm glad we were able to fit this one in. Fantastic.
Brilliant.
So there you have it. That's it. Season 2, episode 11 is in the books. I hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Sean, and I want to thank him for joining us this week. Sean, once again, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
Yeah, so YouTube and Instagram, it's Sean, Shaun _ Explores. You'll find me on both there.
Okay. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakandmirror@gmail.com. Sean, I'm also looking to you to give our listeners your recommendation for a book, a movie, a documentary, a website, YouTube channel that will help keep them connected to outdoor adventures. What do you have for us?
Not much of a reader, as you've probably established. I watch a lot of YouTube. So we've mentioned his name earlier on. Get watching Hayes Outdoors. He's who inspired me. He does all sorts of stuff, whether he's in the bush, whether he's in the forest, or he's swimming in a freezing cold lake, or he's at the top of a mountain and he's in a bird. The guy, if you're from the UK, just give him a watch. Very humorous, chilled out guy, gets out to some great places, and it's good entertainment.
Yes, good choice. Good choice. That's a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs, Sean, to any of your friends or relatives who may be listening?
Yep. Again, it's probably from the YouTube community. I'll get my missus listening to this. She watches enough of my YouTube videos by force. So big shout out to Die Outdoors UK. Again, he's in most of my videos. Go and check him out on Instagram. Top guy. Couple of shout outs to a couple of guys who've helped me out on the way as well. Being Dave Outdoors, which you've mentioned as well. He's got a half decent follow. He's got about 3,000 subscribers now, and it's growing every day. He's doing pretty well. Ash Outdoors. Have you noticed all the UK guys have got Outdoors after them?
Yeah.
Well, Ash Outdoors, another top bloke. We're going to be sorting some collaboration camps and videos this year. And then another really good YouTuber to watch is a YouTuber called, his channel's called Step Away From The Screens. His name's Nobby. He's done the coast to coast trail. He's done a lot of things that I'm aspiring to go and do. He's already gone and done them, but extremely funny guy.
His name's Nobby?
His nickname's Nobby, yeah. I think his real name is Nobby.
Sounds like a trail name.
Nobby, there you go. Yeah, you know what he will be. Again, ex military guy he is. Hard as nails. Get on to him.
Okay. Step away from the screen. I'm going to check that one out.
Step Away From The Screens. Really, really funny guy, yeah. Top man.
Okay. Well, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if a fire ember has burned through your tent, your sleeping bag, and your sleeping pad. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.